over to Leslie Tom to do the introductions for the next part of our general session. Let's all give Leslie Tom a round of applause.
Hello? Hello? Is it on? How do we turn it on? Oh. Okay. All right. Roger can hear me. That's good. Yeah, that'll work. Today I'd like to introduce Reverend Donald Lee from First United Methodist Church here in Sacramento. It's a church that I belong to, and he will do our invocation this afternoon. Thank you.
Thank you, Leslie. It's an honor to be here with you today. Folks, I invite us to be in a spirit of prayer. God of us all, we give you thanks today for your abiding presence, always with us, guiding us and strengthening us for the journeys we are on. We give thanks as your beloved children for all the ways that you work for good in our lives. As we gather today, some of us are sighted and some not. Grant that each of us can experience your blessing of seeing with our hearts, caring deeply for each other, supporting each other, and working in each other's best interest. This is your love in action, and Lord, your love knows no bounds. So long ago, Saul was busy persecuting people who did not believe as he did, part of an organized effort to diminish others. And then on the road to Damascus, he was struck blind by lightning and had to be led into the city by holding the hands of his guards. Then, Lord, he met you, and he saw you not with eyes, but with his heart and his spirit. And in that event, Saul's life and ours is changed. We remember this story, Lord, to remind us that seeing your goodness and love is not a matter of eyesight, but soul sight. And we remember also the words of the prophet Isaiah, who said that our purpose is to loose the bonds of injustice, to undo the thongs of the yoke, and to let the oppressed go free, and to break every yoke. Help us, O God, to break every yoke that holds people back and to remove every barrier to joyful living. Help us, too, to trust in your mighty presence so that we might know ourselves and each person as whole and complete. Help us to live in your light, which is shining in our souls, that we might let that light shine into the world around us. And, O God, we pray your blessings on the beautiful people gathered here today and the work we do together to make this world of ours a little bit better place to live. May they be open to your courage, your strength, your peace, and your power for living. We pray this in the confidence of your amazing grace. Amen.
There we go. Thank you, Reverend Lee. We really appreciate your being here today with us. Now I have, we had some Girl Scouts earlier, but they all have left except for Andy, who is going to do the Pledge of Allegiance with us today. So if you want to stand.
Everybody is. Everybody already has the right hand over their heart, basically. Yeah. Okay. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, Andy, thank you very much. Andy's done this quite a few times in the past, as she's been growing up here with our group. So, yeah. Okay, thank you, Roger.
What I'd like to do now is give the presiding of this general session over to our second vice president. Give a warm round of applause for Roger Peterson.
Hello, everyone. I get to preside over part of a session today, I think. But that's okay. That's fine. I won't let it get to me. You know.
You can preside over that part, too.
Our first speaker today happens to be a person that I've met before. At a little celebration, sort of a housewarming, as I recall it was, at the home of Jeremy Johansson, the member of our technical operation group. Stephen Beard is a person with a disability, and he is in the real estate business, and he has made it his business to put the two things together and be kind of an advocate in the real estate business for folks with disabilities. And he's going to tell us how people with disabilities can be homeowners and how you can be a homeowner if you're in a Section 8 home and things like that. So he's from San Leandro, I think, and he's a member of a real estate firm in Berkeley. And let's all give a hand for Stephen Beard.
Thank you so much, Roger. I was just, when I looked over and saw you, I remembered that party for Jeremy and meeting you there. Actually, it's Richmond, but that's okay. They're both beautiful communities in the East Bay. Thank you so much for allowing me the opportunity to come and speak with you. What I'm going to be sharing with you is an abbreviated version of a presentation that I do at my own seminars that I hold throughout the East Bay around home ownership and affordable and accessible home ownership for people with disabilities. And so it's abbreviated, so there may be questions, and whatever the time allows, I'll be happy to answer questions at the end. So basically, the first thing I want to share with everybody is that disability is not a barrier to home ownership. The ability to own your own home here in California with a disability depends on five key components. One, your ability to save money. Two, your ability to manage a budget. Three, your ability to manage debt. Four, your ability to tap into special programs. And five, your ability to be flexible. And I'll touch on all of those things. One of the things that happens when I meet with people is they think that it's sort of out of their control. You know, we've got all these other people buying homes or selling homes, and it's this big market. It's all very overwhelming. But you actually control more than you may think you do as a potential home buyer dealing with disability. First of all, I always have a conversation with people about making the rent versus own decision. And I'm not going to have time to go into some of the parameters around that, but suffice to say that for a number of reasons, renting is not as advantageous for many people as owning is. There are tax disadvantages and there are control disadvantages. And so deciding whether or not renting or owning is the better way for you to go is a longer discussion, but that's certainly one factor that you control. You get to make that decision. You get to decide where you live, how much you need to save, how to manage your money, and who you're going to work with to help you achieve this goal. So I want to talk a little bit about saving money. Everyone understands that if they want to be a homeowner, they need to save money. But it's easy to understand the importance of it, but it's hard to actually do it. And so just three ideas I'm going to bounce forward very quickly. One, if you are working and earning income through an employer, they can divert a portion of each of your paychecks into a special savings account so that over a year or two or even 3 years, you could save several hundred or even several thousand dollars through direct deposit of money into a special savings account you set up for yourself. So that's one way that we can make saving less painful on a tight budget. The second thing is something called individual development accounts. These are called IDAs. And there are some nonprofit organizations over the years that have been able to offer these shared savings plans that are exempt from any restrictions imposed by collecting government benefits, which I'm going to get into a little bit more later. And then finally, in California, you can buy a home with gifted funds. So a family member can provide you with money that they have to sign an affidavit saying they don't expect to get it paid back, a gift, and that can help you with a down payment as well. And I'm going to show how all three of those things, each or in a combination, can make the issue of saving more manageable. Another thing that you control is your income and your cash flow. A couple of things I want to point out about that. Obviously, the income you bring in, whether it's from benefits or from a job, determines how much of a monthly payment you could afford for a mortgage. But if you can afford to spend $800 to $1,200 right now for rent, then you probably can afford to spend that much on a mortgage. When lenders calculate how much you can have for a mortgage, including any ancillary costs such as property taxes or home insurance, they don't want that cost to be more than about 45% of your monthly income. So let's suppose you're on SSI and you're collecting $800 a month. The maximum payment that you would be able to possibly get under the best circumstances in a mortgage could not exceed $400, $375, $400, which is an awfully small mortgage that wouldn't allow you to buy anything. But that's the calculation. 45% is pretty much where it tops out. You can get 50% under certain circumstances with certain lenders. Another thing to keep in mind is that if you are on a benefit program like SSI or SSDI, lenders will adjust your income upwards by 25%. And the reason they do that is because that income is not taxable income like from a job. So they mark it up as a consideration of what you can afford for a monthly payment. So give an example. Let's suppose you're collecting $2,000 a month SSDI. Then they would mark that up to $2,500, if I'm doing my math in my head right. 20% would be $2,500, right? So anyway, so it really, that also is, and so if you're earning income from a job, that doesn't get marked up that way. And I'm going to talk more about Section 8 later, but if you're on Section 8, you certainly don't need anywhere near as much income to be able to make it work in California. So I talked about choosing your team. Another thing you choose is who you're going to work with. And I want to briefly touch on the difference between a regular real estate agent and what I like to call an accessibility specialist. So three big things there. Your typical real estate agent is going to operate at their speed, and an accessibility specialist should be operating at your speed and your pace. I've worked with a lot of clients over the years who've had MS or multiple chemical sensitivities or visual impairment, and it has been my experience that I have to be very sensitive to the pace at which folks evaluate the homes I show them and pace at which they digest information I share about writing offers and about determining a negotiation strategy and all that stuff. A lot of agents out there, very successful agents, are trying to make the maximum amount of money in the shortest amount of time. That doesn't mean they don't see their clients well, but it means they operate at a certain pace when they're working with buyers because they're primarily listing homes. They're not primarily working with buyers. And so the focus is less on a sensitivity to the needs of the pacing of the client. Another thing I want to talk about in terms of two different types of realtors is your typical agent expects you to determine how properties meet your accessibility needs. An accessibility specialist should be previewing properties for you and determining how the accessibility of the house or the condo or the property meets your needs through a proper assessment of what your needs are. Finally, a typical agent is not knowledgeable about services to the disability community, and you really want your real estate agent that's helping you with probably the biggest purchase of your life to have some concept of what's going on in the disability community in terms of resources, but also to know the difference between SSI and SSDI and to understand some of the what Medi-Cal is, for example, and Medicare and those types of things. So one of the things that I like to stress when I talk to people is that every client's needs are unique. When I work with two clients, for example, who are visually impaired, I'm going to be asking them a lot of questions about what sight they have, if any, how they perceive light, and how those things impact the way they want to live in their homes. So we customize, when we work with clients, we customize the home search to meet the needs of the life circumstance of the person we're working with. Okay. There are basically three types of loans out there right now that are in the market right now. And I say right now because this stuff changes in 6 months, it might be a different story. Right now there are three. There is a FHA loan, which is probably very well known. It's Federal Housing Administration, FHA, and it is a 3.5% down product. So if you buy a $100,000 property, you only need to bring $3,500 to the table. And they also offer a construction variant called a 203K, which means if the house costs $100,000, they might lend you $120,000, and the extra $20,000 goes to repairs to make the home work. That's called a 203K. So this is a very popular loan. It is popular because it is no risk for banks to offer it because it's an insured loan. The banks are insured against their losses by the federal government. The second type of loan that's available that I talk about is VA loans. Anyone who is a veteran can get a loan through the VA if they're 100% service-connected disabled, and it's 0% down. It's the only 0% down product I think is out there anymore. And then finally, we have conventional loans, which are non-governmental loans, and those are typically at least 5% down, sometimes 20% down. So to give you an example, on a $100,000 property, that's anywhere from $5,000 to $20,000 of cash to get into one of those loans. Conventional loans are better in my market of the Bay Area right now because they typically have lower carrying costs than do the FHA loans, and they're better perceived by sellers in a market I'm in, which is very competitive. All right, down payment. So I talked to you about saving being difficult. There are a number of strategies we use to help our clients reduce the amount of money that they need to have. So you may remember I said $100,000 property, you need $3,500. Well, not necessarily. In certain cities, they offer down payment assistance programs. So right now there's a $20,000 program called CityLift that is offered in 9 Bay Area counties that is $20,000 towards towards the down payment. That's one program. The state of California has a 3% loan right now, so if you've got this FHA where you're putting in 3.5%, you actually only have to put in 0.5%. So that $3,500 just went to $500. And then if you've got a gift from a family member of $500 or $1,000, you essentially could have 0% down out of your own pocket. That's pretty important for people who are on SSI, and I'll tell you why in a minute. I want to talk about government benefits. There is no government benefit. Let me rephrase. No government benefit may be taken away from you because you buy and own your own home. Let me say that again. Just because you're on SSI or SSDI, or Medi-Cal, they can't take those benefits away from you because you buy a home. However, Medi-Cal and SSI have asset limits associated with them, how much you can have the bank account at the beginning of the month. If you're single, it's $2,000. If you're married, it's $3,000. So that inhibits your ability to save money to buy a home. I mean, if you want to save $20,000 to buy a home and you're on Medi-Cal, even without SSI, you're only allowed to have $2,000 in the bank. It makes it hard to save $20,000. The other thing to know is that some benefits, like Medi-Cal, may be repayable in the future to the government. And so they can put on a home to get their money back under certain circumstances. And there are avoidance techniques around that as well. So I want to talk a little bit about that asset limit dilemma I was just referring to. So with the $2,000 that individuals can have and the $3,000 that married couples can have. So you can get around it either by having money in a protected account like an IDA, which I referred to before. You can gifted funds, so a family member is providing the down payment, so you don't have to worry about carrying the money in your bank account. Or, as I said before, using a down payment assistance program so the bulk of the down payment is paid for by the down payment assistance program and you don't have to bring it to the table, thus you don't threaten your asset limit. Another way you can buy a home on a very limited income is through Section 8. So how many people, raise your hands in this room, are on Section 8? Okay, a good number. I'd say about 10, 15 people rose their hands. Okay, so one time back in an era that is bygone and we can't really remember, the federal government got kind of progressive about Section 8. And they came up with this idea that, well, maybe we can let a Section 8 voucher holder use their entitlement to pay a bank instead of paying a landlord. So let's suppose you're on Section 8, you're renting a one-bedroom, and you're paying $350 a month of the portion of your rent. They said, why don't we let them buy a one-bedroom condo and let them use that $350 as a contribution towards a mortgage payment? So they came up with this great program called Section 8 Home Ownership, and we have been successful in putting probably almost a dozen people into their own homes who use this program. So these are people who are dealing with disability, who are on Section 8, and who are collecting SSI. Most of them are not earning any other income. Yet they were able to buy their own homes. And this is how they did it. They based their voucher into a mortgage payment. A very, very cool program. In order to do it, you need to have, there's mandatory training and financial counseling through the housing authority. And if you're disabled, the program lasts for the full 30 years of the first mortgage, and you don't need to be working. This program, by the way, is available if you're not dealing with disability, but you can only get it for 15 years, and you do need to be working on Section 8. But for purposes of us today, it's 30 years of mortgage subsidy, and it is there's no work requirement, and at the end of 30 years, you have paid the first mortgage off completely, and you're no longer on Section 8 either at the end of 30 years, but you don't have a housing mortgage payment anymore, so it's okay. You own the house outright. All right. Some caveats, some important caveats. The program is not offered by all housing authorities. In fact, most housing authorities don't offer this. In my area, it is offered by the City of Oakland's Housing Authority and by the Housing Authority of the County of Alameda. But it is not offered by Berkeley or Alameda or Livermore or Contra Costa County, except for Pittsburgh. It's not offered those places. Now, I'm not familiar with your county up here, so for those of you from the Sacramento area, we need to do some further research, but it may or may not be offered. The other thing that is important to know about this program is that in order to use it, you must be a Section 8 renter. I get calls from people who want to get on the Section 8 home ownership program, and I ask them, are you on Section 8? And they say no. They're on a waiting list, or they haven't even applied. I can't help them, and no realtor could, because in order to start the process, they already have to have their voucher. So what the process is, you make contact with the Section 8 home ownership coordinator for the housing authority where you are or where you want to be. You attend all their required classes and counseling. And then after that, you'd be referred to a lender, one of their preferred lenders, who'd help you arrange arrange the financing and help you get your pre-approval letter. And then you would select a realtor to help you find a home. And they have a list of realtors, but because they're a government agency, they can't recommend anyone specifically. But they have a list of realtors they've had experience with using this program. And I strongly recommend, by the way, that if you get into this, you select a realtor who has some experience with it, because it's a complicated process and it involves dealing with the housing authority, and that's not for the faint of heart for any of you who've had experience dealing with the housing authority. Okay, a few things to remember about Section 8 home ownership. First of all, the voucher size is really important. The more bedrooms on your voucher, the stronger chance you'll have of making it work. The other thing is, even with this program and lower interest rates, finding an affordable home in a neighborhood you like is still going to be difficult. And you have to be really patient, because most of our Section 8 clients, it takes anywhere from 2 years or more from the start to when they get the keys. It's not something for the faint-hearted. Be very motivated, focused, and patient. And the other thing is, it's not that easy to make this work with foreclosures and short sales. The good news is that the quantity of distressed properties is going down fairly quickly from where it was at the worst of the housing crisis. So we're seeing more and more regular sales in the marketplace. All right, so the last thing I wanted to just touch on briefly is affordability. So let's suppose a hypothetical purchase price of $200,000, and you're gonna tap in. I'm just going to give you one example. You're going to tap in to a city-based down payment assistance, and you're going to have, let's say you're going to have a $10,000 gift from the family. And so I'm actually going to give you the numbers so you can have them for your record. $200,000 purchase price with a city down payment of program assistance that gives you $60,000, which is not unheard of at all. And let's suppose your family gives you $10,000 and you bring to the table $1,000. So on a $200,000 purchase price, you've put down $71,000, which means that you're going to be actually only having a loan of $139,000. Your total monthly payment in that scenario, based on a 4% interest rate, which is higher than what you can get right now, and based on a very conservative estimate for how much property taxes are going to be, I come to $933 a month. Now, in the Bay Area, where I am, $933 a month is a pretty good one-bedroom apartment rental rate. So the carrying cost of a small home competes very favorably right now with the cost of renting. And you don't need a lot of down payment to do it. So I wanted to finally, talk to you a little bit about the kind of market we're in. Everyone always wants to know, how's the market, right? So the market right now has five basic characteristics that are really important for that we always talk to our buyers about. Number one, we're in a seller's market. A seller's market means the sellers have all the power. When I talk about the market, I'm talking primarily about the Bay Area, but this extends through much of the state too, and probably this area too. So a seller's market, the reason we have a seller's market is because there's not enough homes out there for people to buy. To give you an idea of how bad it is, at the top of the boom in the Bay Area, in the East Bay, not San Francisco City, but the East Bay, we had over 13,000 homes available on the market waiting for a buyer to come back in July of 2007. As of March 31st, there were about 1,800. So you can see that's a very, very low number. The market that we normally see when things are quote-unquote normal is about 5,000 homes available. So if you've got a scenario like that, you're going to get a lot of people bidding on the same houses and you're going to get a lot of multiple offer situations. I go to a sales meeting once a week at my office and agents say how many offers they got on their listings or how many offers they were bidding against, and it's typically a two-digit figure. So it makes it really, really difficult for somebody to buy a property in those circumstances if they've got a very heavily financed offer. The other factor in the market right now that's partly driving this problem is low interest rates. We are still near record low interest rates, and that's attracting a lot of people into the marketplace to buy homes because the cost of money is low. We also are observing, and this is statewide, 30% cash buyers. According to the California Association of Realtors. That means 3 out of every 10 offers is cash. And when you're a cash buyer, you normally don't have to do an appraisal and you normally don't have to get a loan. You don't have to get a loan at all, so there's no loan contingency, no appraisal contingency. So if you have 20 offers on the table and your offer is heavily financed and you need an appraisal and a loan and you offer $200,000 and the cash guy comes in at $190,000 or $185,000 and he's going to close in 2 weeks and he doesn't have an appraisal contingency or a loan contingency, it makes it hard for you to convince a seller to go with your offer. And this is what's makes it really tough for buyers in the market right now. The other thing that's changing is I talked to you at the beginning about these FHA loans being very popular. They're going to be a lot less popular because the government, as of April 1st, increased the fees on them, making them very expensive, not just to get at the beginning, but to carry in terms of the mortgage insurance premium that you have to pay as part of the monthly payment. So with that high fee associated with them, and that high carrying cost, the conventional loans with low down payments are going to become a viable alternative for many buyers, and these FHA loans are going to be used less, I think, in the marketplace, where a buyer can get away, can do it. So I am based in the Bay Area. I have a lot of resources that I share via Twitter, Facebook, my website, blog, all about the housing market. And I also wanted to share with you that I'm on the City of Oakland Mayor's Commission on Persons with Disabilities. I'm the chairperson of the Mayor's Commission. And so I'm involved in disability advocacy in the East Bay. And I have cerebral palsy. It affects the way I walk. And I'm very, very motivated to help people dealing with disabilities to make their lives better in whatever way it works out, and around housing especially. And I really appreciate the opportunity to share with you some of these thoughts. And if I can answer any questions, I'd be happy to do so. Yes.
Steve, I'm Mitch Pomerantz, and a lot of folks live in condominiums, including Donna and myself, and I'm the president of our board, and if I recall correctly, there's another issue with FHA loans, and that is that if you are looking at a condominium, the condo has to have a certain amount of money in its reserve account. And I believe that's correct, because we're in the process of trying to get our reserves up to a point where potential buyers can, in fact, qualify for FHA loans. We're not quite there yet, but for folks, assuming that the information I was given is correct, for folks who are looking at condominiums, and there are big advantages, as far as I'm concerned, to being in a condo as opposed to a single-family home, that's something you may need to also consider. The other thing that we discovered when we bought 11 years ago, realtors who don't specialize in accessibility are trainable. We got very lucky with the husband and wife that we chose as realtors. We told them we needed to be in an area with good public transportation, with bus services. I was working at the time and commuting downtown. It was when they were putting in the Gold Line through into Pasadena, and they were fantastic. They drove us to all of the showings. So you can, if you work with a realtor in advance and do a little bit of training, they will work with you, and they will accommodate your particular needs.
Thank you so much. I couldn't agree more. There are excellent real estate agents out there, and I encourage them to come to my presentation so they can be even more excellent in serving our community. And so I definitely agree with you there. And I'd never meant to imply that you can't train realtors, because I got trained at one point. But there are also real estate agents who don't understand this stuff. So you would take that on yourself to do that training. The second thing I want to respond very quickly about the FHA business is that it is very tough right now to buy a condominium using FHA financing unless the building has already been approved as an FHA, quote unquote, they call them projects. It used to be you could get spot approvals. It used to be that if you wanted to do FHA financing, you were buying a condo, the lender doing the FHA loan could go inquire about the nature of the percentage of owner occupancy and the budget and the reserves, just like you talk about. And if it met those criteria, they could get what they call a spot approval. But now, they don't offer that. And so unless the building is already an FHA approved building, our FHA buyers are really restricted in the condo selections they have in the communities where they want to live. So an FHA loan to buy a condo is becoming a rare thing indeed, and that's a very, very true what you just said.
Okay, I won't push buttons. You're right. It seems to... Oh, there I go. Stephen, if people can't afford to buy and they must rent, do you have advice for them on how, and I don't even know if it's possible, to find a realtor to help a person find rental property?
That is an excellent question. The short answer is no. I get this question all the time, and what I'm trying to do is to start promoting accessible rentals on my blog and my Facebook page whenever I hear about them. I do a lot of work with the Center for Independent Living in Berkeley, and once a month they do a housing workshop where people who are looking for rentals who need affordable and sometimes accessible rentals, they go to those workshops, and the Berkeley folks give them lists and lists and lists of different nonprofit agencies and housing projects that are available or sometimes have waiting lists. But it's really tough to find accessible rentals or even affordable rentals, especially in the Bay Area right now, because rental market is going bonkers.
I'm just going to do a plug here. Stephen, Beard helped my husband Steve and I found our condo, and we recommend him to everybody. I know that's why we wanted him here, so he could be recommended to here and everybody in our streaming land throughout the world.
Thank you, Judy. That's very kind.
Yeah, I think we might have time for one more question, eh?
Could you stand if you have a question or raise your hand really high? Oh, over there? Okay.
When you do you go and show houses to people, and another thing is, when they have a lot of steps, how do you handle it with your disability?
Wow, that's a great question. I use a cane, and I don't like steps, but I'm able to handle them, at least so far. I don't like to show homes that have 50 stairs to get up to the home. I've seen a few of those. They're more in the city than in Oakland and Berkeley, where I am. But I'm able to manage. But if my client, I mean, one of the parts of the part of the process is learning what your client's needs are. So obviously, if it isn't going to work for my client, then I won't be able to show them the home. But I can manage stairs. So if my client is looking at places that have steps and that's something that would fit with their needs, I can make, there's no problem for me to show them property.
You know, in one of our pioneers in this organization is a guy named Bob Campbell. And he built his own house. He was a blind, totally blind man. Built his own house in the Berkeley Hills. And he told me there were 200 steps on his property.
Wow.
Let's see. Are there any other questions? Or I think we might be done.
No, there's two more.
Let me get you on the mic so you're recorded.
What was that again?
I actually work as a lender here locally, and I remember of another program that's 100% financing, but it might not be practical for you guys. That's a USDA program. It's 100% financing, and you can finance your closing costs, and you can use a gift on that as well. But the only downfall of that is accessibility. It has to be rural. You have to be up
towards
El Dorado Hills or north, or maybe out by Loomis or Lincoln. So that might be something. Or if you have maybe somebody else in your household that is sighted, that gives you a right.
Farmers Home Administration used to be, I think.
So anyway, that's another 100% program out there. But you just have to consider the accessibility because the key program that is you're in a rural area, so buses might be hard.
I want to thank...
Use your mic back.
I want to thank Stephen, and it's clear to me that he's a man who knows his Freddy from his Fanny.
Ba-dum-bum.
And let's have a big hand for Stephen. Going to do a door prize? Okay, let's do a door prize, guys. Have Stephen do the...
I'm bringing somebody else. Right there.
Stephen draws it out, it'll come with a Section 8 voucher with it or something.
Yes.
What am I drawing for?
Bag of fudge.
Bag of fudge coming, folks. Bag of fudge.
From Our Lady in Berkeley, Katrina. Alice McGrath. Are you here? I think she is. Any more, Madam Chair? Okay, so we thank Stephen. And according to my program, the next item is a report on Mutt Strutt, and I... would like to. I think I'm supposed to give it back to the president at this point. Is that correct, Madam President?
Yes.
All right.
Thank you.
You are.
We are juggling up here. All right. The next item on our agenda. Excuse me, as I cough too. Sympathy coughs here. The next item on our agenda is we're going to do a report on our CCB Mutt Strutt, And to do this report, hot off the presses, right on the spot, literally, we have our own Frank Welty. Give him a round of applause.
Good afternoon, everybody. Well, last year we had another successful Mutt Strut, and this year is going to be even bigger and better. We are going to be, for the first time, having three Mutt Strut regional events. They're going to be on the same day, September 7th. That's a Saturday, the first Saturday in September, from 8 o'clock to 1 o'clock p.m. The Los Angeles Regional is going to be at, help me out here, which park is that? Crescenta Valley Park in, is that Pasadena? In La Crescenta. The Sacramento region is going to be at Rush Park in Citrus Heights. And the San Francisco region is actually going to be in San Francisco at Lake Merced. And unlike last year where we did walks, this year we're going to also have running racing as well. So we're doing this because not only do we want those of us here to be there, those of us with friends and dogs, also to get into the running community, to bring that whole new running community into contact with CCB. We have prepared. Our plans are all going forward. We have gotten running timing companies that will be handling the technical parts of timing our running races. We've all secured our venues. We have also prepared brochures that will give people information about the Mutt Strut. Those are especially good for giving to potential donors and to taking to service clubs to give out to people who want more information. And we have flyers. They're one-page flyers for each of our regional events that are a shorter version of information about the Mutt Strut and also have a Mutt Strut registration form on the back. Great for giving out to people that are interesting or for posting on boards. And our Mutt Strut webpage is up and running. It's at ccbnet.org/muttstrut. And from there, you can get information about the Mutt Strut and also go to the webpages for registering for each of our regional Mutt Strut events so you can register as a participant. You can be involved in the Mutt Strut in many ways, whether you're going to be physically at a regional event or not. First off, for those of you that are in proximity to one of our regional events, you can register as a participant. The price to register is $30 per participant for adults, and for children from 6 years old to 10 years old, it's $10. Children 5 and under get to be there free. Dogs all get to go free no matter how old they are. And then when you're registered, you can get your friends, your family, your co-workers, your parishioners, club members, neighbors, cousins that you haven't seen in 5 years since you had the fight at the Thanksgiving dinner. You can get them to sign up and sponsor you. Businesses also, you can get to sponsor you. And if you've got a business that wants to sponsor a little bit more, they can become event sponsors, either for the local event or, if they want to put out a lot of money, for the whole statewide event. And what's really cool is that we know of at least one chapter that isn't very close to one of our events, but they're actually going to have their own event to support the Mutt Strut. The Redwood Empire chapter is going to be planning a picnic that they're calling the Dog Days of August picnic for the Mutt Strut, and the proceeds will go to the Mutt Strut. And those of you in chapters that aren't close to a Mutt Strut event and aren't in a position to get involved in your nearest local event might want to consider something like that. The point is that the Mutt Strut isn't just for somebody way over there in Sacramento or L.A. and San Francisco, but it's for you in your chapter wherever you are, and there are ways for you to get involved to the extent that you're able to, whether it's donating, whether it's finding people to donate, whether it's giving us information about businesses might donate, whether it's organizing your own local event to raise some money to support the effort. We have brochures available. We have flyers available. If you are in one of our regions, contact the region chair for more information and to get flyers or brochures. Again, for me, it's I'm Frank Welty, and I'm the San Francisco region chair. Jeff Tom is the Sacramento region chair, and Ken Metz is the Los Angeles region chair. So get in touch with either one of us, and we'll give you more information. We hope as many of you as possible are involved. Last year, we raised between us something like, it was a net of close to $10,000. And I'm sure we can do several multiples of that this year, especially when we get the runners involved. So this is your Muttstrut. This is your organization. And the work that you do in behalf of the Muttstrut is going to give CCB the power to reach out to the blind community and really make a bigger difference than we already do in the state of California. Are there questions?
Questions. Do we have any questions? I know our microphones are off and on.
If you want, I can repeat a question.
What I'd like to...
There we go. They've got it. What I'd like to share with you as well, which is something really neat that the committee instituted, and we shared it at the board meeting as well the other night. Each region has its own top fundraising dog.
Yes.
And the every year that'll be the top honor bestowed upon the top dog for each region who raised the most money in the previous year. So the top dog from San Francisco is none other than Avalon. Yes, Avalon is our top dog. Avalon brought in the most money the previous year.
Of any dog.
And lots of dogs there, too.
Lots
and lots of dogs. So I know we're already having some races between some of the other dogs that will be there to who will be the top dog in San Francisco. I can already hear them hoofing it or pawing it or what do you say? Trotting,
woofing.
Strutting, woofing.
They're definitely going to be strutting out there.
They're going to be strutting. The Sacramento region, their top dog this year, again, the dog that raised the most funds in last year's Muttstrut, the previous year's Muttstrut, is none other than Tahoe. Tahoe was the top dog. Avalon, by the way, for those who don't know, belonged to Peter Pardini. Avalon was out there woofing for the money. And woof, woof, yes, you heard Peter over there. And Tahoe belongs to our own Elena Thomason. So, yes. And in the Los Angeles region, the previous top dog in a past Muttstrut in L.A., our top dog is... Scotch Pomerantz, and in memoriam of our Scotch Pomerantz, because a lot of you know that we lost him last year. And yes, Roger said, and he'll be strutting in that great Muttstrut in the sky.
Yes.
and see, you know, he'll be able to, Mitch said, yes, he'll need to have his meal and beef jerky and carrots and all those other things he used to eat, so while strutting. So I would encourage all of you who wish to get involved in the Muttstrut to do so, and on our 2014 flyer, it may be your little four-legged friend who could be the top dog in your region next year. So
also, all three regions are looking for volunteers as well.
Yes. So if anyone wishes to volunteer, please contact Frank or Ken or Jeff. You know how to find them. And
we also have a volunteer page in the Muttstrut area on the website.
Yes. So it talks about some of the different things that could be done Things as simple as touching base with maybe the local market that you shop at and asking them for gift cards, or maybe putting some flyers in, you know, your local gym or your local Starbucks. Everybody loves that Starbucks. There are a number of things that you can do to help and share your gifts with the CCB for the Mutt Strut. So give them a call, Frank, Ken, or Jeff, and find out what you can do to help be a part of the huge success that is our Mutt Strut. Thank you. Okay. I don't know if we have Jeff yet. We don't have Jeff yet. Okay. I go ahead and allow Mitch to make an announcement. And I know there's a microphone over there.
There is.
And it's right next to Mitch. Uh-oh. Wait a minute. What are you going to say? You didn't clear it with me first. I don't know if you want...
Negative.
You know, see, I was...
Now, she knows perfectly well. I've been good the last couple of days.
He has.
Because...
It's really hard for him, too.
Because you folks are selling CCB raffle tickets. Well, I've got raffle tickets, too. You've all heard of the ACB Forum Raffle. And all of the proceeds for the raffle go to what we are now calling the American Council of the Blind Braille Forum, the ACB Braille Forum. And Roger, being the good fiscal liberal he is, said they're expensive. The cash prize, however, is pretty good. The top prize is $5,000. Second prize is $1,000, and third prize is $500. You can, I'm doing this before I tell you how much the tickets are, you may go into partnership with up to five folks, up to four other folks. The tickets are $50 a pop. I have tickets here. We can get assistance for folks who need to get them filled out, but I will be carrying them around the rest of the day, the evening, tomorrow morning. If, in fact, you need to come up with friends to go partners with, then what I would ask you to do is to call or email me. And you send me a check. When you send me a check, I will send you your stub back. So the phone number, and we'll make it easier, we'll use my cell number rather than the home number that everybody's always calling Don on. She gets many more phone calls than I do, thankfully. Well, she talks on the phone longer, too. It's
you don't need dinner on Sunday night, do you?
I'll just call your mother. She'll feed me.
Oh. And he gets her. He tells her, I don't feed him. He's so hungry. I'm so busy with CCB. And my mom says, I don't know what happened. I didn't hear that way.
And she makes the best chicken mole in the world. Anyway, the number to call if you want to buy an ACB Forum ticket is 626-372-5150. Yes. Yes, yes, yes. And my email address is mitch.pomerantz@earthlink.net. But you do not.
You do not have to be present to win. Mitch will take checks. And his number again is 626-372-5150. 5-0. His email is Mitch, M-I-T-C-H, dot Pomerantz, P-O-M-E-R-A-N-T-Z, at earthlink.net. Ooh.
The drawing will be at the banquet Thursday evening. Remember, we're moving the convention up a day. So Thursday evening, July 11th. And, of course, the banquet will be streamed on ACB Radio. So that gives you a little incentive to listen in to the banquet festivities.
Okay.
Yeah, there are a limited number of tickets. I don't remember exactly how many, but we do limit it. And I've got 17 tickets left in my little envelope, so y'all come.
Thank you, Frank. Thank you so much.
Okay. So I was thinking of, you know, just ending general session early, and we don't need to discuss the next item at all, do we? No. Oops, I'm sorry. I was thinking of the wrong place. I apologize. Yeah, Mitch is moving adjournment. Okay. And they're going to have me preside over this session. So basically what I have done is I have asked the members of the annual conference and convention transition task force to come up to the front here. Two members that we do not have are Jerry Kunstler. Jerry Kunstler was not able to be at our convention, but he definitely laid a very, very strong foundation for the work that we're going to be doing. He is very thorough. Another member of our task force who is not up here at the table today is Jean Lozano. Jean needed to go home. He's having a lot of back pain and stuff, And so I told him to please go home and take care of himself. We'd be fine, even though he'd be missed. So he chaired the conference and convention program logistics component, yes. And for those who were not at the president's meeting or at the board meeting on Thursday night, I divided this task force into two groups, the Conference and Convention Logistics, which is chaired by Jean Lozano, and on serving on that group is Peter Pardini and Jeff Tom. Now, the part of the task force that was dealing with the conference, the Constitution and Bylaws, going through that, has, as I shared, Jerry Kunstler definitely put together a strong foundation. Gabe Griffith, who is our current chair of Constitution and Bylaws, and Mitch Pomerantz, serving on that committee as well. Myself, no, not yet. Not Roger yet. Roger and I served on both groups. So both of us were working with the two groups as they were putting everything together and going through things. We had a number of calls, lots of healthy debate and discussion. It was good. But it's not over yet. What I wish to do at this point is to give the microphone over to Gabe so that he can start the part of this session dealing with the Constitution and Bylaws. And Gabe, do you have a microphone?
Yes, I do.
Yes, you do. Okay.
Yes, I do.
It's all yours.
And Madam President, what would you like to do here? Would you like to, we had the first reading of several amendments last night. Would you like me to read them one at a time and then vote on them after they're read and then move on to the next one at that point?
First of all, I'd like to know, can everyone in the room hear Gabe?
Okay, is that better? Yes, it is. Should be. Okay, would you like me to repeat my question, Madam President?
Go ahead and actually state that this is what you will be doing.
Okay. What I will be doing is we did the first reading of several resolutions last night. So
amendments.
Amendments. I don't know which
we did
I'm
resolutions
on
too.
I'm yeah,
tired.
But Jeff read those. Okay, so we did the first reading of several amendments last night. So what I will be doing here is doing the second reading. We will then do a vote, and I will read them one at a time. We'll do a vote on that amendment, move on to the next one. We have a couple of bylaws to read and vote on today. And then I will, time permitting, do a first reading for some more amendments that are proposed that we'll do the first reading today and second reading with discussion and voting in the fall. So with that being said, I will start with the second reading of the first item.
Before you continue, remember everyone, and you read it in the program over and over again, and people say, why do you put it in there so many times? Do you have your badge with its orange dot?
Yes.
Everybody in here needs to have that. In case if we need to do a vote, a visual vote. So, Gabe, go ahead and continue, please.
Okay. And if I move away from the mic and people have trouble hearing, please just holler out and I'll move closer again. Okay, this is Article 4, Newell Perry Endowment Trust. Current language, Section 4.9. The trustees shall prepare an annual report to the membership at the council's annual fall convention. The action is to delete the first reference to annual, delete the word fall. So the proposed language is section 4.9. The trustees shall prepare a report to the membership at the council's annual convention. The Constitution and Bylaws Committee recommends a do pass, and I so move.
We have a second. Do we have any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. Thank you. Continue, Gabe.
Okay, I was just putting a note in my document here so that going back looking at it next week, we know that it passed.
He was putting a note in his note.
Just want to make sure that Jerry and I can actually update the Constitution this time.
An honest man.
Okay, the next item is, hold on. Okay, the next item is Article 5, dealing with meetings. Current language, there shall be a regularly scheduled meeting of the California Council of the Blind annually. The place to be fixed in advance by the president or the convention. Actions is replace president or the convention with board of directors. So the proposed language is section 5.1. There shall be a regularly scheduled meeting of the California Council of the Blind annually. the time and place to be fixed in advance by the Board of Directors. The Constitution Bylaws Committee recommends a do pass, and I so move.
We have several seconds. Any discussion? Okay, let's get, is that Kathy? Okay, let's get a microphone over to Kathy.
We heard a lot about changes. I guess this is one. I know the president, and I didn't remember that the president could do this or the convention, but I will not vote for anything that would take supreme authority away from the convention. I know that people think times change and everybody has to change, and we do too, but we've always been successful in this organization because everyone could come to the convention and vote and could have a say about what we do. And I think that the convention should not lose that option.
Okay, thank you. Can we have someone? Yes, Mitch. I have the timer on, so.
No, I'll be in the queue.
Go ahead, Mitch.
I would only respond to Kathy. Going back to Jeff's presidency, Kathy's presidency, and mine before it.
Everybody awake?
Done nothing.
Going back through Jeff and Kathy and my presidency and probably before, the reality is that the president, but more importantly, the Board of Directors has been making this decision. So all this does is to codify what has been practice in this organization for many, many years. We're not taking anything away from the membership. This is something that has been a presidential function at some point in time, but more recently, going back at least 20 years, has been a board responsibility. This is just bringing practice theory into practice.
Jeff?
I can't add very much to what Mitch said, except I will only say this. We don't want a constitution that doesn't reflect the reality of what we have been doing.
Thank you very much. And of course, as was stated, this is something that's been done for a number of years. All we're doing is putting it in writing. And I will state that as long as I am president, and I'm sure for future presidents, as been done in the past, this decision, unless there is an emergency, will be made out in the open for everyone assembled at convention who chooses to attend the meeting to do. Any more discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No. No.
Abstentions? Motion carries. Thank you. Gabe, next one, please.
Okay, the next item is Article 11. Board of Directors' Duties. Current language, Section 11.11, on or before January 1 of each year, the Treasurer shall notify all affiliated organizations, sustaining members, and members at large of the annual dues owed by them to the Council. The Treasurer shall prepare a list of paid up members to be given to the president at least 45 days in advance of the regularly scheduled spring convention. Members may submit amendments to the list to the treasurer up to 30 days prior to the regularly scheduled fall convention. Actions, delete the last two sentences. That is, the treasurer shall prepare a list of paid-up members to be given to the president at least 45 days in advance of the regularly scheduled spring convention. Members may submit amendments to the list to the treasurer up to 30 days prior to the regularly scheduled fall convention and replace them with a single sentence that is, the treasurer shall prepare a list of paid members to be given to the president by February 15th. So the proposed language is section 11.11, on or before January 1 of each year, the treasurer shall notify all affiliated organizations, sustaining members, and members at large of the annual dues owed by them to the council. The treasurer shall prepare a list of paid members to be given to the president by February 15. The committee recommends a do pass, and I so move.
I'm sorry. Ed was giving me logistics here. Okay, do we have a motion? We have a second. Do we need discussion? Please stand so that they can get a mic over to you.
There we go. Okay, thank you. This is Doug Martin from San Diego. Two things. First, a point of information. Does this mean that members no longer can submit amendments to this list? And secondly, just please explain the rationale for moving it up by. I understand the concept that we may not have a spring convention. The convention could be any time when we go to a single. But why move it up by 15 days when the dues are due? And how do members make amendments to the list if this passes?
And you're talking about you can always add to your rosters. That will never change. The 15th, the rationale for moving the date to the 15th is because related to the logistics that we are having to deal with and the assistance that at times we're needing to provide to our chapters and affiliates, as well as trying to contact people that we haven't heard from. All of that unfortunately takes a good amount of time. And if we are late, we will not be seated at the ACB convention. Also, we have Ed that provides the assistance as well as doing a number of other different things. And so it's pretty much a clerical and administrative issue, as well as wanting to make sure that we are compliant with the requirements of what ACB wishes for us to do, and wanting to give us the time to be able to provide the support to you that some of you need in relation to your rosters.
What about members submitting amendments
to the rosters?
Madam President,
Gabe, can I allow you to respond related to clarification?
So what I would say to that is that the list had to be submitted before the spring convention, and
yes,
it could be amended before the fall convention.
Correct.
Since there's no longer
a
spring and a fall convention,
yes,
there's no longer a need to amend the list before the fall convention.
Correct. And I apologize for misunderstanding your specific question to the amendments. Okay, we have another question. If you can please stand so we can get a mic over to you. That must be Vita from the San Francisco and Contra Costa chapter.
Point of clarification. Can you please tell us what ACB requirements are, what have changed that has pushed up the date, the February 15th date?
I'd like Mitch to go ahead and take that one, and then I will also add to it.
Vita. Hello. There you go. Vita, what's really changed is that our requirement is still that all credentials with accurate membership lists need to be in the hands of the ACB office by March 15th.
Yes.
The fact is really nothing has changed except the situation, the circumstances that CCB has have changed. We are by far the largest affiliate of any ACB affiliate. In fact, with maybe a couple of exceptions, we are three times as large as the average ACB affiliate. So that means that if March 1st is the deadline for chapters to get their information into Ed and only Ed has to verify the information for 1,000 people. In the days when we had two staff, it was a little less onerous, but right now Ed is doing it himself. So this is really a nod toward our new circumstances. And I'll also tell you that it really shouldn't be a hardship on local chapters. All of the chapters that I've been involved with in this organization for 25 years, our constitutions call for the ability to begin collecting dues for the following year, October 1st. So that gives you 4.5 months. I just can't imagine that moving the deadline for chapters to get materials in from March 1st to April to February 15th is going to be a significant hardship, assuming you start collecting dues the following year when, in fact, you may do that, which was October 1st.
And in the interest of full disclosure, and democracy is wonderful. I wanted our date to be sometime in the first week in January. And the committee made me an offer I couldn't refuse. And that's part of, logistically, since I've become president, there's just so much involved. And as we were talking about at the president's meeting last night, we really need your help to help us make this happen, because our books need to be honest, and they're only as current and honest as you give the information to us, and we only have Ed. So, it's a logistical thing. Kathy.
There are three past presidents in this room right now of this organization. I think all three of us can tell you we've had a date forever that I can remember for March 1st when chapters have to get their information in. The sad truth is, folks, we don't do it. All of us had to call, and I'm sure Donna did this time, and Ed, and remind people when your dues are due. So probably moving it up 15 days, maybe we can get with it on time. If it changes, it kind of rattles our memory that it's got to get in there. Mm-hmm. It's not possible to go all through the things that we have to verify for the American Council and expect someone to be able to do it when people don't have their things in on time and
Amen.
They have not had.
Amen. Yes. Okay, I have a woman who sought the floor in the back. Yes, our Thank credentials you. Chair. By the way, I also had to enlist the help of the membership committee who made some calls. And sadly, I have to say that some of them were treated a bit rudely when they made the call. And we'll have to work on that too. Go ahead, Madam Chair of Credentials, Pam.
I heard about that. Well, I just wanted to say that the March 1st date didn't work anyway, because this year, being that our convention was when it is, and we were to adhere to the 45-day yes. prior, everything needed to be in by February 25. So the March 1st date didn't work anyway. If you wanted to adhere to the Constitution, because while we're having the two conventions a year, the Constitution mandates that it's 45 days prior to the spring convention and 30 days prior to the fall convention. So that March 1st date needed to be nullified anyway. Thank you.
Any more discussion?
Good question.
Quick comment, and then somebody please call for the question.
Yeah. I wasn't really bringing this up to get into a big discussion. I just know that, like myself, we need to go back to our chapters and we need to tell them something logistically. And that's really why I was brought it up. I know there's a lot of people in this room who need to go back to their chapter and say, we have to have this in by a certain date, and they're going to be questioned. So it helps us to go back to our chapters.
All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. Thank you. Gabe. Next, please.
And the great part of that is Mitch no longer has to hear the phrase paid up.
Yeah, payback. That was paid up. I'm sorry, paid up. That was another hotly debated item. The committee debated grammar, punctuation. Oh, it was fun. And Roger said, did anyone suggest paid down? Oh, dear.
And the sad part is, I think somebody did mention that.
Someone said paid back. Okay. Gabe, it's all yours.
I just thought Mitch would appreciate that little thought. Okay, the next item is also Article 11, Board of Directors Duties. Current language, Section 11.12. The treasurer shall report to the council's annual... The treasurer shall report the council's annual financial position to the council membership assembled at each fall convention. The treasurer shall also provide reports of the council's current financial affairs to the president or to the council within 30 days after receipt of a written request thereof by the president or the board of directors. Actions: delete the word fall. Proposed language, section 11.12, the treasurer shall report the council's annual financial position to the council membership assembled at each convention. The treasurer shall also provide reports of the council's current financial affairs to the president or to the council within 30 days after receipt of a written request thereof by the president or the board of directors. The committee recommends a do pass, and I so move.
Do we have any discussion? Please stand so that you can get a mic and identify yourself by name as you ask your question.
Well, I'm Mike Keithley. Does this mean that a member cannot ask for reports, financial reports?
No, it does not.
Thank you.
members can still ask for... If I can have treasurer, but yes, members can still ask for those reports, and Peter is our treasurer. Please give clarification.
To clarify this, basically, this provides that there'll be a financial report given at the annual convention, and the board of directors and or the president can request additional reports with 30 days written notice to the treasurer.
Any other discussion? All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. Thank you. Gabe?
Okay, we have one more item for voting on today. Actually, one more constitutional amendment, I should say, for voting. Then we have bylaws. Section 14.1, dues shall be paid on a calendar year basis and shall, if unpaid, be deemed delinquent on or after March 1 of the year due. Actions: delete March 1 and replace with February 15. Proposed language: Section 14.1, dues shall be paid on a calendar year basis and shall, if unpaid, be deemed delinquent on or after February 15 of the year due. The committee recommends a due pass, and I so move.
We have several seconds. Any discussion? Kathy needs a mic. Wait. Kathy's mic is heading over to Kathy.
I just was wondering, I don't quite understand why you're moving this to February 15th. It just gives people from January till February 15th to pay their dues. Are they delinquent?
The rationale is that we need to move the date to be consistent with our rosters. We don't count a roster unless we have the accompanying check for the dues from the chapter. Anyone else from the committee wish to? Mr. Treasurer, go ahead.
And also, this would be consistent with the amendment that was previously voted upon, stating that the dues, I mean, that the rosters are due on March 5th. I mean, April 15th. February 15th.
Peter was the one that kept wanting to say, no, you can't do it in January. So look at, he's moving it even more. Peter, no. Okay. Roger said, at least I didn't say fooey. Okay. All the guide dog users got that one. Any more discussion? Okay. Person in the front row with a question. Here comes the mic.
My question is...
And it's Donna Sanchez.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Donna, and if we can have quiet, please.
And my question is, when does this start? Does it start in 2014 or does it start in 2015?
You know, we debated that one too. And the task force recommended that these would start in 2014.
Okay, thank you.
Yes. You're welcome. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. Thank you. Let me go ahead and give it over to Gabe.
Okay, so the first item is, or the next item is a bylaw. And just as a point of clarification here, bylaws do not require a first and second reading. That's why we did not do a first reading last night. And bylaws only require a majority vote no matter when they're voted on. So just as a couple of points before we get started here. And the first item we have is on Article 1, committees. current language, section 1.14, at the spring convention during the credentials report, the delegates shall announce their representative on the nominations committee. No member of the nominations committee shall represent more than one chapter or statewide affiliate. No employee of the council shall serve on the nominations committee. Membership on the nominations committee shall not preclude members from being nominated by the nominations committee or from the floor. Actions. Delete the word spring. So the proposed language is section 1.14. At the annual convention, during the credentials report, the delegates shall announce their representative on the nominations committee. No member of the nominations committee shall represent more than one chapter or statewide affiliate. No employee of the council shall serve on the nominations committee. Membership on the nominations committee shall not preclude members from being nominated by the nominations committee or from the floor. The committee recommends a due pass, and I so move.
Okay. Do we have any discussion?
I have a question.
Peter has a question, and then Bernice. So go ahead, Peter.
Should that be nominating committee?
In our constitution and bylaws, it actually says nominations.
I mean, but it should be.
It.
I mean,
unless you want to amend it. I mean, we tried to do as much of the cleanup and all of that as we could. If you wish to change nomenclature, that discussion is for another time.
Okay, that would have to be submitted, I believe.
Correct.
As a bylaw
amendment. Bernice has a question.
But I'd be open to it.
Okay. Basically, that was my question. Is the report is usually currently given on Friday evening, and that's a little late to announce the members of the nominating committee from each chapter. And I was trying to figure out what we do call the morning session. We don't call it a report.
I'm going to give it to Roger because Roger is saying something, and then we'll get a microphone to Kathy.
The report of the nominating committee or nominations committee is at the evening session. It has been, always has been, and still is. What happens in the morning is the meeting of the nominations committee, and so all we're changing is taking the word spring out. I've noticed, frankly, for a while that there's a difference between our customary usage, which is nominating committee, and what it says in the Constitution and bylaws, and never gotten around to doing anything about it. If you guys want to suggest thing, we can do that, but it's probably not germane to this particular point. No, because we're not changing anything. It's just as it has been.
Madam President, I'm remembering the form that's sent out all the time to ask you to give your delegate and number of people you have and all that, the credentials form that goes out. I was sure that always had a space on it to ask for who was coming to your nominating committee.
Yes, it does.
Yes, it does.
Madam President.
Gabe.
I believe what the Constitution is referring to, and Roger, please correct me if I'm wrong, is not all the paperwork that goes in ahead of time, not the credentials meeting in the morning, but is referring to the credentials report or roll, what we, I think, sometimes also call roll call, at the Friday night convention. So it's not saying that's the first time you're going to hear about who's on the nominating committee. It's just saying as part of the...
It's the last time.
Roger just said it's the last time. It's just referring to the Friday night convention or general session when we have the credentials committee report that as part of that report, it's supposed to include the delegate for the nominee person on the nominating or nominations committee.
And you recall that at the end of the roll call last night, we adopted the report.
Madam President.
Okay, Linda.
I am suggesting that we consider the possibility that some of the pieces that we have written in stone in terms of the timing of these events, credentials, nominating, and so forth, are going to be perhaps considered and slightly altered, and that all we're doing in this motion, in this bylaw, is taking care of the logistics, and the it always happens at X hour needs to be put aside for the moment.
Very good.
Okay. Okay. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. Thank you. Gabe?
Okay. Next is Article 1 committees. Current language is Section 1.15. The nominations committee shall meet in executive session during the spring convention and shall submit its report regarding the nominations during that convention. The nominations committee shall verify that nominees are members in good standing and that they are available as candidates. Actions: delete the word spring and adjust language to reflect annual. Proposed language, Section 1.15, the nominations committee shall meet in executive session during the annual convention and shall submit its report regarding the nominations during the convention. The nominations committee shall verify that nominees are members in good standing and that they are available as candidates. The committee recommends a do pass, and I so move.
Okay, we have a second. Available. Available. Okay. And do we have any discussion? Because there were seconds. Do we have discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. Thank you. Gabe?
That is all the items we have for voting today. Madam President, at this time, would you like me to proceed with the first reading of the other items?
Yes, I would. And to let folks in the room know, we will also be having a reading of the report from the nominating committee last night, if you were wondering. Okay. Gabe, please do the first reading.
Okay. A couple of these are going to be a little bit lengthy in the reading, so please bear with me. I'm warning you up front. So please don't throw anything at me. Okay. I was just saying that a couple of these are a little bit lengthy, so please bear with me and don't throw anything at me. First item is Article 17, Constitutional Amendments. Current language, Section 17.1, this constitution may be amended at any regular convention of the council by an affirmative vote of 2/3 of the members who are present and voting. The proposed amendment shall have been introduced at the previous regular convention of the council, and it shall have been presented in writing to the to the Constitution and Bylaws Committee. Section 17.2, this Constitution may also be amended at any regular convention of the Council by an affirmative vote of 3/4 of the members who are present and voting, provided that the proposed amendment shall have been presented in writing to the Constitution and Bylaws Committee, and that it shall have been presented to the Council Convention at least one day prior to the day on which the final action is taken. Actions: delete both Section 17.1 and Section 17.2 and replace them with a rewritten Article 17. So the proposed language is Article 17, Constitutional Amendments. This Constitution may be amended at any regular conference and convention, provided such proposed amendment has been presented in writing to the Constitution and Bylaws Committee at least 2 days prior to the day on which the final action is taken. Any proposed amendment shall have a first reading to the conference without discussion and a final reading with discussion, parentheses, if necessary, close parentheses, at the time the vote is taken. A 2/3, parentheses, 2/3, vote of those present and voting is required to adopt a constitutional amendment according to voting procedures contained herein. Amendments to the Constitution and Bylaws shall take effect on the July 1st immediately following the relevant vote. And that completes that one. The next item is Article 4, Newell Perry Endowment Trust. Current language, Section 4.3. The trustees shall serve without compensation. Their duties shall be to accept, receive, and hold, invest, and reinvest contributions to the Newell Perry Endowment Trust with interest thereon and additions and accretions thereto and such other income that might occur upon the order of the Board of Directors of the California Council of the Blind shall pay out and distribute the earned income for the purposes set forth in this article. The Board of Directors shall not order the expenditure of the corpus unless constitutional amendment is adopted for that purpose, which must be proposed at the regular constituted convention prior to the regular constituted convention at which such amendment is adopted as provided in Article 17, Section 17.1 of this Constitution. Actions: replace the comma after the word accrue with a period and delete the remainder of the section, that is, upon the order of the Board of Directors of the California Council of the Blind shall pay out and distribute the earned income for the purposes set forth in this article. The Board of Directors shall not order the expenditure of the corpus unless a constitutional amendment is adopted for that purpose, which must be proposed at the regular constituted convention prior to the regular constituted convention at which such amendment is adopted, as provided in Article 17, Section 17.1 of this Constitution, and replace it with, upon the order of the Board of Directors of the California Council of the Blind, trustees shall pay out and distribute the earned income for the purposes set forth in this article. The Board of Directors shall not order the expenditure of the corpus unless a constitutional amendment is adopted for that purpose, as provided in Article 17 of this Constitution. So, the proposed language is Section 4.3. The trustees shall serve without compensation. Their duties shall be to accept, receive and hold, invest and reinvest contributions to the Newell Perry Endowment Trust with interest thereon and additions and accretions thereto, and such other income that might occur, accrue. Upon the order of the Board of Directors of the California Council of the Blind, the trustees shall pay out and distribute the earned income for the purposes set forth in this article. The Board of Directors shall not order the expenditure of the corpus unless a constitutional amendment is adopted for that purpose, as provided in Article 17 of this Constitution. And okay, and that leaves us, I believe, with one more item to read today.
Okay, hold on one second. Let's Kathy is going to share a point of information. Kathy is one of the trustees, and that is why I'm allowing this. Go ahead, please.
The trustees in good shape, by the way. We have $204,000 in there. We've almost tripled the original contribution. But anyway, I'm interested and concerned, and I'm the point of information is, can we, the Constitution, I'm not sure if that's what the trust actually does. My point of information would be, if we can amend our Constitution, are we amending the trust? Because I know we can't amend the trust.
No, we are not amending the trust. It is strictly a constitutional amendment.
Well, but my point is, I don't know if what's in that Constitution is in the trust, and I would recommend that we look at that and see.
Okay, Jeff, and then Mitch. Well, hold on one second. Jeff, is this a clarification?
Yes, it's just clarification. This would not amend the trust because it doesn't change anything substantive in terms of the way the trust is administered.
Okay. It's not changing.
It's already.
But it's already
there. It's only conforming to the change in the constitutional amendment. It's simply a conforming amendment, Kathy. It's not changing the trust provisions themselves in terms of what the trustees have to follow under the Constitution. And we can get back to you on it, because we're not supposed to discuss it, but we can get back to you on it to assure you that you're comfortable with it.
Madam President,
we understand, and I'm going to go ahead and give it over to Gabe.
I was just going to say, I'm sure myself and Jerry and Roger and Jeff, we are planning on having probably conference calls to discuss these. So without discussing it today, I'm sure we can find a time to discuss with Kathy and make sure that everything is in compliance before it's brought forth for voting in the fall.
Madam President, I do have a request.
Okay.
For a suggestion.
Mitch has a suggestion.
Hello. Yep. Because this and the subsequent proposed amendments are just a touch more complicated, were you planning on having these published in the summer issue of the BC? I think if you're like me,
I do
much better reading something under my fingers than I do hearing it, at least
hard
if it gets a little
brand.
Too complicated. So
we can definitely do that.
Yes.
I think if this part of Gabe's report is published in the BC, I almost said the forum.
We can do that. We absolutely can do that.
All right.
Yes.
I didn't say monitor either.
No.
I'll
strenuously request that.
Madam President, I have absolutely no problem with providing
the three
amendments that I'm doing the first reading of today. I have absolutely no problems with providing those to be published in the BC.
And there'd be no problem anyway because, you know, we need to do it. So
yeah, but no,
it
I'm
will
just
be
saying
done.
I'll make sure they get to Judy as soon as possible
absolutely.
To be included.
Okay. And we're kind of getting into discussion, and we can't really do that. So
it's not a discussion of amendments.
All I wanted to ask is if there would be contact information given to if there were comments to be made.
We'll put that in the article as well. Very good question.
Thanks.
Okay, Gabe?
All right, now on to the last item for for reading today. It is Article 10, Board of Directors Composition. Current language, Section 10.4, all officers and directors shall be elected for two-year terms, subject, however, to the provisions set forth in this article. The president, first vice president, treasurer, and four directors shall be elected at the convention in each even-numbered year. The second vice president, the secretary, and five directors shall be elected at the convention in each odd-numbered year. The terms of officers and directors shall commence January 1 of the year following the adjournment of the convention at which their election occurs. Actions, beginning with the word fall. Bear with me, I'm going to read this as it was, but I think we had done some tweaking with this, and so I think there's some old language in here. But the proposed language will be correct. Delete it and the remainder of the section that is fall convention of each even-numbered year, the second vice president, the secretary, and five directors shall be elected at the fall convention of each odd-numbered year. The terms of officers and directors shall commence January 1 of the year following the adjournment of the convention at which their election occurs, and replace it with annual convention of each even-numbered year. The second vice president, the secretary, and five directors shall be elected at the annual convention of each odd-numbered year. The terms of officers and directors shall commence on July 1, immediately following the adjournment of the convention at which their election occurs. Explanatory paragraph regarding the change to one conference per year. One conference per year, and the need to adjust terms of office. Inasmuch as the council has acted to hold its conference and convention on an annual basis instead of the current semi-annual basis, the service length of those elected in the penultimate and ultimate conventions at which elections were or will be held under the current provisions shall have their terms adjusted accordingly. Those elected fall 2012 shall serve from January 1, 2013 through June 30, 2014. Those to be elected fall 2013 shall serve from January 1, 2014 through January 30, 2015. So the proposed language, section 10.4.
It should be January. June.
I'm sorry. Through June 30, 2015.
Roger said it was a redo.
Yes, it was. Yeah, no, it was written June. I just said January after having read January, so I apologize. So the proposed language is section 10.4. All officers and directors shall be elected for two-year terms, subject, however, to the provisions set forth in this article. The president, first vice president, treasurer, and four directors shall be elected at the annual convention of each even-numbered year. The second vice president, the secretary, and five directors shall be elected at the annual convention of each odd-numbered year. The terms of officers and directors shall commence on July 1, immediately following the adjournment of the convention at which their election occurs. Inasmuch as the council has acted to hold its conference and convention on an annual basis instead of the current semi-annual basis, the service length of those elected in the penultimate and ultimate conventions at which elections were or will be held under the current provisions shall have their terms adjusted accordingly. Those elected fall 2012 shall serve from January 1, 2013 through June 30, 2014. Those to be elected fall 2013 shall serve from January 1, 2014 through June 30, 2015. And Madam President, that concludes the reading of the Constitution and bylaws for today.
Thank you very much. Yeah, you know, after that, wait, yes. Jeff is actually making a motion.
To accept the bylaws and Constitution and Bylaws Committee report.
Madam President, one question about that motion.
Yes.
Is that appropriate at this time, or are we having a continuation of the Constitution Bylaws Committee report tomorrow, and should that motion be held until then?
We are accepting because we've done the entire report today, so Okay. We are accepting it today.
Okay. So does that mean that there will be no report from this committee tomorrow? Am I understanding that correctly?
Kathy is seeking the floor.
I'm going to have to buy this lady a pair of roller skates. I'm wondering, Jeff, could we amend your motion to accept the portion of the committee that we voted on today? I mean, we only had first reading of some of these last things, and so we need to vote on the things that we already have okayed and voted on today. Could you make your motion so we could cover that, and then we could do the rest tomorrow, maybe?
Madam President, Kathy, the motion to accept the report doesn't mean we accept what has been put forth for the fall convention. It just means we accept the report that he has made to
today.
Us. He has done his job.
Correct.
That's all that motion means, in my view.
Okay. There's another question, and then we will... Oh, she was calling for the question. All right. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. Yes.
Kathy just reminded me of something that I learned from Don Stevens, who's the ACB parliamentarian, and Roger is the CCB semi-official parliamentarian, hopefully will concur. Don Stevens always reminded me that, and it's not that I'm a big fan of Robert's Rules of Order in terms of some of the ceremonial aspects, but if when you're doing, for example, what Kathy just did, you say move the previous question, as opposed to somebody saying question, which can be construed as someone requesting the floor to ask a question. I hope I haven't confused you, but there's a difference between asking a question and trying to resolve the previous one.
And I actually, that's why I thought there was another question, so thank you. Roger wishes to say something.
That's true. In fact, as I recall, now, there's been so damn many versions of Robert's Rules of Order that I can't keep track of anymore. But the last time I remember reading about this in Robert's Rules of Order, it said that the practice of calling the question is a disorderly practice. And that if you want to, when you want to force debate to stop when it hasn't stopped of itself naturally, you must move the previous question and it must be handled as a motion. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But as I was just telling Donna a while ago, when the debate seems to be stopped, the chair can just say that, you know, in the absence of any further debate, we'll go to the previous question, go on.
And that why I always ask Roger for his counsel, very wise counsel. And he says, well, I don't know about that, but it is. And Mitch seconds that motion. So are we all in favor that of Roger's wise counsel? I wish, before we move to our next item, I wish to thank...
Did we vote to accept the report?
Oh, yes, we did.
Oh, all right. I need a beer.
Wake up, little hamster. Wake up. Okay. I did that before the other day, too, so now it was your turn. We have the report of the nomination committee, and depending on our time after that, I wish to briefly summarize the report of what Jean was to share related to conference and convention program logistics. So a point of information from Doug Martin. Go ahead, Doug.
Okay. Thank you. This is with respect to Roger's thing, and this is something I've wondered about actually for several years, and that is, are you thus stating Robert's Rules of Order says that one individual other than the chair does not have the authority to limit debate simply by saying, I want it to stop? Is that what you're basically saying?
He said yes. Okay. I wish to thank this committee. They did lots of work. I think that was evident today. Please give them a huge round of applause.
Madam President?
Gabe,
may
yes.
I say a couple of words?
Yes.
And as much as the committee did a lot of work, I would really like to recognize that, even though he's not here, Jerry Consular for the Constitution amendments that I read. Jerry really, there was several of us emailing forth with ideas, but Jerry really did the lion's share of the work as far as going through the convention or the Constitution, pulling out the items that were relevant, and really doing a lot of the work of writing down the amendments. So thank yes. you to Jerry, and yes, let's have a round of applause for Jerry for doing all yeah. that work.
Okay, I will give the microphone over to Pam Pology for the Nominations Committee report.
There will be an amendment to change that.
Okay. Oh, yeah, Lord. That's good.
Oh,
yeah.
Are you listening, Ken?
Stop it. Leave it.
Yeah.
Okay, Madam Chair.
Good afternoon. I'm going to give you state to you the positions that are up for election, which are second vice president, secretary, and five board of directors. So the slate is second vice president Roger Peterson, secretary Judy Wilkinson. The board of directors are Artis Basin, Linda Perel, Vita Zavali, Robert Wen, and John Ross. And that concludes the report.
Okay. Thank you very much. Do we have a motion? We need a motion, correct?
Yes.
Point of information first. Let's get a microphone. Okay, Bernice moves to accept the report of the Nominations Committee in mid-seconds. Kathy seeks a...
My information question is, can you put in the, since we have the time, can you put in the BC who currently are in the positions that are up and what if they're still eligible to be on board? Did I make myself clear?
You would like to know who's in office now and who was brought forward.
If they're still eligible to run, how many terms have they had? So we know if they're there and some they might want to be there and some people might want them there. I want to know, you know, if we could know who they are and what term they're in. So if we want to retain somebody, we can. And if we want to think about somebody new, we can do that too. What I want to know is, are any of these yes. positions being brought forth because people have termed out? I probably would have been a shorter way to say. But people don't okay. know that, and I think it would be helpful to have that in the BC.
Well, I would have read that, but I was instructed just to read the slate, so that's what I did.
Yeah, someone in the nominations committee probably just instructed her to do that. I wasn't in there, so it wasn't me. Bernice?
I do have that.
Yeah. Okay, so Bernice will provide... Pam with assistance, but Pam does have it as well. She
yeah, I was going to say I have it right here, and it is in the BC already.
Yes. Bernice and Roger keep that up, and it is in every BC, and the terms are there as well. So we will make sure it gets into the summer one.
So you don't need me, right?
No, I mean... You, Pam.
Pam, we need you. We always need you.
Well, what I meant was right now.
You're correct right now.
Okay, so could I just take the opportunity for one second to thank the nominating committee and to especially thank Frank Welty for giving me very much assistance that I needed, because I've only done this one other time, and that time there was no opposition to deal with, and I couldn't have done it without his help. And I really appreciate everybody that was in there and supporting me and being patient with me. Thank you guys so very much.
Thank you very, very much. Roger wishes to have the mic, and I don't know, is that Mitch and Gabe over there being so noisy?
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
You have to vote.
Let them sit close together again.
I know. And Gabe is saying we haven't voted on the motion. Roger, was this discussion specific to the motion?
Yes,
or
it was.
Okay.
I wanted to ask in terms of the request about what should be in the report, that I believe that there is at least one situation where a person who was not termed out chose not to run again. Should that be in the report?
I'm hearing a number of no's, and I'm hearing some yeses.
I don't know the answer.
Yeah.
Madam President.
Jeff?
Thank you. If we begin the process of putting this in the report, that in the report, I mean, why don't we put every vote in the report? I mean, we have got to limit it, I think, to the specifically what Pam told us. That's what the rest of it will be in the BC. You can find out about it however you want, but this report should be strictly limited, I think, and I think Pam did the right thing.
Madam President?
Okay. And let's see.
Linda.
Yeah, and actually, Roger made a quick but very relevant point. You don't want to breach the confidentiality of the committee either. And Roger did make that point right now. So, Linda and then Bernice.
Would it make sense? Obviously, some folks are running for terms, you know, continuing and additional terms. And at least a couple of folks are running for the first time for the position that they're nominated for. Would it make sense to indicate that this is a first-time run for certain people?
What she said was, would it be appropriate to indicate when you name them that it is the first time that a person is running for the position? And I guess what I would want to know is, you know,
you usually
folks,
do it that
go
way.
Ahead, Bernice.
Well, you can indicate an incumbent, but I wouldn't indicate a first time. Usually that's how they do it.
Correct.
Mitch can attest to the fact that things sort of got out of hand where we didn't know who was up for what term and whatever.
Yes.
Some years ago.
Yes.
And so it was at that point that I had to straighten him out, and I had to straighten everybody else out. And that's why I started putting in the board roster, beside the person's name, the year in which they were elected and the year that they were up for election. Not when their term started, but when they were elected and when they were up for election, so that we could keep track of, and then putting the number of the term that they were serving so that we could keep track of what's going on. And I don't think we need to reprint that anywhere else in the BC. If you look at your board list, everybody has
yes.
has their dates and their term number there. And what the chair of the nominating committee did was what she was supposed to do, is read the slate and
yes.
period. End of discussion on that. So if
yes.
people have questions, you know, we spend a lot of money on that BC. Let's
yes.
use it.
Yes.
Good job.
Thank you. Okay. I wish to thank you, Madam Chair, for your job with credentials and nominations, and she has a very tough job, and I just would wish
two very tough
She has two very tough jobs. Yes, she does. It's, and so, well, actually, I was told that we did vote to.
No,
we didn't.
Haven't.
We didn't vote.
We got thrown off.
Oh, it was moved and seconded. See, now it's my turn. That's what I get for making fun of you. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
And please join me in a round of applause for our Credentials and Nominations Committee Chair.
Thank you very much. Thank you guys very, very much.
What I wish to do quickly, in that we have about 7 minutes left, is just briefly share some of the highlights of the report that Jean Lozano was going to share with you today related to the conference and convention logistics. These are things that that we're looking at, and the board the other night also voted to raise the registration fee effective at the fall conference and convention to $20. So begin our fall convention, registration fee will be $20. The board also voted that we would have our conventions in the spring in alternating areas of the state, northern and southern. And this was done specifically to allow me to begin to work in hiring contracts for 2015 and 2016, because things are getting better for hotels and we want to try and lock in some good rates. Some of the discussion that we had was beginning our board meetings on Thursday afternoon at the noon hour from noon to whatever is what they're saying, noon to four, noon to three. And what we talked about was having the offer of it being a ticketed meal, so that if folks want to eat, we can all eat together. But folks don't have to. We will have the room in a section for those who wish to sit down and have a meal. And we will have another section of the room where we will have the chairs set up as they are now. So it won't be mandatory that if people want to attend, they have to purchase a ticket. But it is an offer that is open. We also wish to that's the registration. Okay. We had a discussion related to K-12 groups coming to the convention. We want to encourage them to come. And therefore, we wish to allow them to attend for free. And if they're accompanied by a teacher or an aide who is officially accompanying them, the group, that they would also be able to attend for free. If a person... Let's see. Okay. Students who are in college would need to pay the registration fee. And K-12. Free. Yeah. So, because we'd like to encourage that. We'd love to have folks come and check out the convention and see, what we're up to. There was a discussion about the rehabilitation committee, and what was brought to us was that it would be best to have it during the day because it would be easier for folks to attend rehabilitation counselors and clients, et cetera. And so the possibility is having rehab committee meet from 10 to 12 on Thursday. I shared with you about the board meeting beginning at noon, possibly going to 4 and making it a plated meal. The welcome party could start at 4. Then we could possibly have the technology committee start its program at 5, maybe 5 to 8, or 6 to 6 to 9. And we didn't include everything here, so folks, we're going to continue to have calls, and you know, please bring the items that you believe that we did not include, because we know we didn't include everything to us. The exhibit room, basically the exhibit room would open at 9 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. on Friday. From 4:30 to 5, the exhibit room would be closed to all the public, and exhibitors would need to begin cleaning up, you know, putting their things away and such at that 4:30 time slot. And then on Saturday, I'm sorry?
I have a question, but I don't know if you're done yet.
Oh, okay, one moment. Well, after I, yes, Roger is also reminding me that the board did approve this report that came from the task force. And I should have said that in the... I should have said that at the beginning before I started giving the report. Saturday at 9 a.m., exhibits again, and exhibits will go to 2 p.m. We heard from several folks that it's a bit of a hardship for exhibitors to get out on Saturday for a flight. And folks start leaving as well. I'll take questions after I go through a little bit of the structure here. And so Sheila, you'll be first. Okay. There was discussion related to the credentials and the possibility of changes to meeting structure and such, and that discussion is definitely ongoing. But what that discussion was that people who were not current or had changes or had questions would come to the meeting that would be held on Friday morning at 8 a.m., and those who were all current, everything in on time, no changes, wouldn't have to come. However, in the interest of full disclosure, there was a lot of concern expressed, and so those discussions are definitely ongoing related to credentials. But the meeting time would still be Friday morning at 8. Okay. Okay, our Friday night programming, you know, would pretty much be the same, and we would make sure that the Friday night session would end at 9:30, and at 10 p.m. nominations committee would start. Our Saturday afternoon session, we would be having elections at that session. So we would have programming, let's see. No, elections would be at 1:30. Saturday afternoon. And we would have regular programming 2:45 to 4 p.m. And all other items would be the same on Sunday, meaning and Gene did say he had discussions with Gussie of the devotional committee. 7:30 a.m., devotional services would start. 8:30 a.m., the business meeting would start. And convention would adjourn at noon. Some of the other things that were discussed were possibly, you know, even the possibility of having credentials and nominating on a Thursday, you know, Thursday evening. Again, that's up, you know, for discussion. There was also discussion for the Friday night session, 7 p.m. business session, no general session speaker on Friday night, having credentials and seating, of course, at that session. The ACB report, governmental affairs report, and president's report would happen at that session. These discussions are definitely ongoing, but what the board did approve was that we would try this scenario with convention still starting on Thursday, board meeting starting at noon, convention ending Sunday at noon, for approximately 3 years to see if it worked, how it worked, what we could improve, what we might need to fix, etc. Again, to allow me to negotiate contracts because I need to look at space and such as well, and length of time and room nights and everything. And so that's pretty much the summary of the report that Jean was going to give today. And before I take questions, I'd just like you guys to keep thinking about him, because for Gene to leave convention, you know, he was in a lot of pain. So keep him in your thoughts and prayers. Sheila.
I am very concerned about the Thursday schedule, and had I been able to make the board meeting, I didn't because of transportation snafus, I would have been there to say that. I don't want the board meeting starting at noon because I can barely get there by 1 o'clock, and actually I can't even make that for the technology committee. So the only good news I have is that the technology committee would be at 6 or 9, 6 p.m. or 5 p.m., and I could actually make that with a fair amount of reliability. But if you start at 12 o'clock on Thursday afternoon, you're basically telling me I have to spend Wednesday night at the hotel unless it's in the Bay Area. And I don't have the money to spend an extra night. As it is, I don't always spend Saturday nights. And I care about what happens on Sundays.
Yes. Thank you. Anything else? Okay, I heard Linda's already spoken, but there was somebody else that I haven't heard speak yet.
And I'm in the
so
back.
If I could have
Lee Morton.
Lee speak and then Linda. And before, actually, Lee, before you speak, I would encourage everyone, and I said it at the board meeting and I said it at the president's meeting, subscribe to the California Connection listserv.
We do.
Call the California Connection every week. I announced a call that we had to talk about all of these scenarios, and we had a total at our highest point, I guess I'd say, of 30 people that were on that call. But I, in the interest of transparency, we had 17 to 20 that stayed on for the full 2 hours discussion. So I think that was pretty darn good. So I'd encourage everybody, access the connection, because that's where you'll see all the announcements if we can't get them into the BC. Lee.
Just had a question. Okay, so we will have a convention in the spring of 2014 that will be in Sacramento. Does that mean 2015 will probably be in the south somewhere, and then, you know, it'll rotate back and forth accordingly?
Yes. Most probably, Roger is saying, and I would say yes. That's what I'm going to be looking to when I'm starting to look at sites and contracts. Linda.
Okay, this is probably going to be, this is the thing I care about the most in terms of anything I'm going to say this weekend. Under the sort of current scenario under discussion, we have nominating occurring on Friday night
and elections at Saturday at 1:30. At no point is there a time for naming the slate of nominees. It doesn't allow for campaigning. It doesn't allow for other people to consider running. And I really strongly want to urge the committee, the logistics committee, to consider having credentials, perhaps late Thursday afternoon in this new model of only come if there are problems, having nominations on Thursday night to give people a day and a half to campaign and have other people try to campaign for positions. I would also recommend that we adopt something similar to ACB and have candidates for positions have written statements prior to conventions. I want to encourage more informed voting.
Thank you. Okay, we have
Gigi.
Several people standing.
Gigi is standing.
Go ahead.
May I have the floor?
Gigi.
I am really thrilled and encouraged that
okay, and we're going to need to take, and I'm sorry, if you could, we're going to need to take one last question, and I'm reminded that we need to leave the room so that it could be set up. So, okay. Donna,
this is Gigi.
Oh, Gigi, yes. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Go ahead. Gigi and
really
then Donna.
I'm really thrilled and encouraged that the K through 12 is being included, but I feel very, I have a lot of questions on why the teens and the youth are being excluded from that.
It K through 12 would be, includes up to 12th grade. So that would be inclusive, yeah. That's okay.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay. Yeah, I know.
Thank you. Thank you.
No problem.
Much.
Donna.
Okay, I'm confused as to which ones the board voted on and is in stone, and which ones are the ones that we can send you emails, talk to you on the phone, go to the telephone thing and whatever.
Okay.
To give our suggestions.
The board voted on registration going up to $20. The board voted on K through 12 and their official teachers or instructional aides, group leaders coming to convention for free, and college students having to pay to attend. The board voted that we would have convention in the starting 2014 in the north and the south, and the north. You know, the alternating years. The board also voted that we would start our convention on Thursday and end noon on Sunday. Board members who are still present, remind me if I'm forgetting something. And we did vote on the exhibit hours as well. Thank you, Roger. So those were the definite things. Yeah, but and again, yeah, Donna says none of that's in stone, it's in clay. Roger said that. The scenarios, those are what, you know, some recommendations that the task force put forward. What's set in clay is definitely these beginning on Thursday at noon and ending Sunday at noon. We're still working on when things happen within that time frame. So you can definitely call and email. Just to let you know, we did have some discussions from other task force members stating that they would like credentials and nominating to happen Thursday evening. However, and this discussion is definitely not over, there was also discussion of wanting the board to meet on Wednesday evening. The discussion the task force felt that it would be too much of a hardship, having to add an extra night, et cetera, et cetera. Again, nothing is set in stone, but the board did vote to start Thursday at noon and end Sunday at noon. Roger says it's Play-Doh. And so that's pretty much where we are. And I know other folks have questions. What I would encourage you to do, and the most difficult thing to do, is to have to stop when there are more questions. But we do have to get out so that folks could set up for the banquet. What I would encourage you to do, because this is not over, you can continue to ask your questions, subscribe to the connection, call the connection, go to the website, access the connection. There will be announcements of future calls. These times of question and answer are not done. Thank you very, very much, and we are adjourned until the banquet.